and sing along. Yeah. Rapping so boring, now correct me if I'm wrong. Yeah. It's like they took the art form. I'm tired of the same rap songs.
Good evening, this is Sean P.
I'm Big Root.
We are the brothers.
Coming to you live from the Boogie Down Bronx.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. Out the Bronx. And we're back for another episode. And this episode is entitled No Money, Mo Problems. And a quick reference to that, we'll just jump back to earlier this week, Big Roop. There was a documentary on Netflix that is a must-see for some must-see fans, if you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, the Notorious B.I.G., I got a story to tell.
Absolutely, absolutely. And just not what the episode's about, but just for our listeners, if you are a fan, you must watch. And for anyone who's just intrigued by a great story of an American success and just a life that was definitely cut short but made its impact, definitely worth watching. It was really a great documentary.
Yeah, I think Netflix really did a good job with it.
Definitely, definitely. So maybe we'll get to that at some point in another episode where I should talk about it. But just because one of his biggest songs was Mo Money, Mo Problems, which, funny enough, he was very autobiographical in his rapping. And he did experience more money and get more problems as he got more successful. Things kind of came his way. And I guess, like most people, he didn't expect that. You know, I'm thinking, once I get money, life gets easier, not harder.
Yep, and he found out, like he says, more money, more problems. You got a lot more problems when you got a lot more money.
Right. And I think the interesting thing for our purposes is that's a reality that most people in this country and probably around the world, but we're talking specific as Americans, will never experience, right? Because most Americans are never going to have the problem of more money, more problems, right? Most Americans are going to have a closer situation to our title, no money, more problems.
Yeah, that seems to be the reality for a lot of Americans these days.
Absolutely. And the interesting thing is, as much as we can imagine what Biggie would went through and anyone successful goes through, because I'm sure there are problems of having money. How do you deal with it? How do you deal with the IRS? The decision-making, people that you want to care for. That's a situation that most people wish they would be in. Because the reality is, when you have $100 and you have $1,000 in bills, you don't know what to do, and that is life altering. And that is closer to reality for people than I have too much money to spend, I don't know how to spend it.
No, you're totally correct. Most people have too much week and not enough money to go to finish the week.
Definitely, definitely. And I do think a big part of life is learning to juggle that. I think we can even touch base on the educational system at the earliest levels, right? Because we know that education as a system in America reflects economics and governance, right? The whole point of school districts is it reflects the tax base of the people that live in that district, and it reflects the type of usually lifestyles that the parents have and basically the expectations of that neighborhood, that society, right? So it's not an accident that kids that are wealthy are better off, because that's literally how it's designed, that your tax base funds the school. So if you live in a poorer district, by default, you're going to have less money. That's just the nature of it.
Yeah, there's less resources for the kids. You're going to have less athletic programs, less equipment, less books, less computers. Be able to pay your teachers less income, you know, less money. So you're getting a lower, not say in a lower level, but maybe inferior, because you have a lot more students in the class than you would want to have. It's not optimal. You know, there's going to be a lot of factors that's going to prevent you from doing your best.
Right, exactly. So funny enough, the reason why I wanted to introduce that point as we go through this conversation is that just personally reflected on my K-12 education, K-12 being kindergarten all the way through 12th grade, graduating high school, which I did. You did too. Woo-hoo. I personally didn't feel cheated. I felt that in the schools we were in and the districts we were in, and we have talked about some stuff in previous episodes, I personally felt that the resources that I needed to progress were there. Obviously, more could have been provided. Obviously, more structure could have been there. In other words, more is always more. But I don't feel that I was deprived in any way. I don't feel that my K-12 experience limited me, right, or didn't provide what I needed. I do know that there are other people that feel the way. And the reason why I'm trying to bring that out is because we already established that there is a difference in wealthy districts and less wealthy districts as far as resources. But then within districts, I guess, where resources are the same, there's also a difference of opinion. And I think that can be projected out forward, where when you get to college, right, people believe that everyone's financial access is the same and everyone has the same opportunities to go to school at a collegiate level. And as I think you're going to add, that's not always true.
Yeah, I totally feel your points. I mean, let me ask you a question. Do you think that your K-12 education adequately prepared you for your collegiate career?
Personally, I do. I think adequately. I think if you were going to say that, was I prepared to overachieve and be the very best around? Probably not. I think it prepared me to go to school, do what I need to do, and get my education. I felt prepared.
All right. I think that me, going from my personal experience, going to a four-year college right away from the school that I went to, I don't feel that I was adequately prepared. I think I thought I was adequately prepared, but I got a rude awakening as to the level of work and how prepared I was for college when I got there. You know, I graduated in the top 10 of my class, so I was a very accomplished student. And I think maybe I thought I was better prepared than I really was for the four-year experience. And it took me a year and a half to 2 years just to kind of get my bearings. And you know how college works. As soon as you get in there, they start counting your cumulative GPA. So they don't want to hear that you're not prepared or not ready, or you took a class that was above your intellectual level.
No. You make a good point. And I mean, I guess we could separate a little bit. I don't want to get too far away from the core conversation, but you do make a good point. Because in truth, when I say prepared, I think I had a lot of the intangibles down. Maybe set the way around, maybe I had the tangibles down, and I lacked the other part. Now, you're right. Maybe going through K-12 education, you should be expected to come out with both the tangibles and intangibles. So I'm not going to say I had everything I needed. So to your point, I guess if you ask the question a little differently, I would say, no, I didn't have everything I needed. I did feel adequately prepared. And I think for me, there's a difference there. But that being said, you make a good point, because you didn't feel adequately prepared and you were a high achiever in high school. And that there is something to say to that, that when a student can do really well, right, in the system they're in, not just meet the requirements, but exceed them, excel, and then go into another system and not be prepared, that can't be ignored. That can't be ignored. Like, I mean, honestly, that can't be ignored, that what happens to the best and brightest if we're not really preparing them and giving them everything they need to go to that next level?
What's going on, man? I don't understand it. I want something good to listen to. I demand it. All the real artists on another planet. And me, I'm the last MC still standing.
Oh, I totally agree with you. Again, this is not the focus of this episode, but I didn't know several people that were on my level or living a little bit above, and they also face the same kind of challenges going to a four-year university. So this is something to also leave on some people's minds. We talk about the differences in education or K-12 education and preparing you for that next level.
Understood. And I mean, it's a good conversation. It needs to be had. It's an ongoing conversation because there are people 30 years later in the same situation. So it's not like we're just reminiscing about our past and it's not relevant. No, it's relevant right now. And education is a link to better access in life, better quality of life. There's no question about it. So here's how we're going to link it, because today's topic is no money, more problems, right? So basically, we already established that K-12 education, at least public K-12 education is based largely on the district you live in and the resources of that district. That's not a secret, so it is financial. Again, no money, more problems. Meaning, if you're in a poor district, you're already at a disadvantage. There's no question about it. You're already at a disadvantage. Even though the education is free, right? There's something in the educational realm called FAPE, free and adequate public education. Everybody gets it. And that's what the conversation we had before about equality and equities is important. Because, okay, everybody can have education, but is everybody getting the same education? And more importantly, are they having the same outcomes? And that's where it falls apart.
True. I mean, because I had a discussion earlier this week on Facebook where someone was talking about the student loan programs of them abolishing the loans. And, you know, I was like, that would be a great move. And I think it's something that I would look forward to. And another person had the opinion of, why would you want them to erase the loans? People should plan properly for education and college. And, you know, it's not my responsibility to pay back your loans that you can't pay.
Excellent. Excellent. I mean, an excellent topic and excellent setup to the next point that we're going to, because this is how it all ties together, right? So I mentioned FAPE, free and public education. I think that's what it stands for, free access, but whatever. Basically, everybody goes to school for free, right? Private school is a whole different conversation, right? Parents are going to find money to pay for it. It is what it is. How that works out, we can talk about that as well. But basically, as an American student, not even citizens, American students, if you're registered in school, you're entitled to a free and public education. That's K-12. There was never any mandate or system in place that guaranteed or established, I should say, free education past grade 12, which is where it becomes a thing, right? And the thing is no different than the conversation we have in all of our political lives, right? It always comes back to money, right? Liberal, Democrat, right? Cut taxes, low taxes, high taxes, minimum wage, right? Trickle down economics, which doesn't work, right? It all comes back to the same thing. It all comes back to money. So going back to the conversation that that was taking place on Facebook, someone said, listen, there's an initiative to basically abolish student loans, right? And that would, how would that work, as far as you know, if they were to abolish student loans?
That I'm not sure. I really don't know exactly how it works. I've heard different proposals, whereas maybe the first $50,000 that somebody owes would be wiped away and they have to pay back the rest. It could be a total abolishment of the whole amount. I'm not totally sure how the parameters are going to work, but it's just, I know there's been a discussion of a lot of people talking that, you know, to help the students that are out now, it might be something that needs to be done because, you know, students that are graduating now are going into the workforce with so much debt that they'll never be able to be true participants of the economic system. They can't buy homes. They can't buy cars. They are paying all the money to pay back loans.
Exactly. And I think if we strip away the personalization of it, and, you know, we spoke before, and, you know, this is a core philosophy of mine. Whenever you talk about economics, I believe you have to separate macro and micro. And I go back to that because I think when I took economics class in college, the first one I took, I think that's what the professor said. We're going to strip it away right away, right? We're not talking about what's in your pockets. We talk about how governments operate or how money operates in society, because that's what will trickle to your pockets, hopefully. So if it's not working right in society, it ain't going to get to your pocket, right? And a lot of times people talk about economics or finance, it's about their pocket, right? Your pocket don't matter if the system don't work, right? If it doesn't run on the banks, it don't matter how much you have or don't have. The banks have to be stable. People have to keep working. The system has to keep operating for your pockets to be okay. And I think that's why I've always, whenever people talk about money, it's okay, let's separate. There's macro and there's micro. And the two do connect, but we have to recognize that. So the reason why I say that now, going back to your point, I think most intelligent and fair people understand that something does need to be done about student debt, right? Because again, like I just said, the system itself is not gonna work. You can't have a whole demographic of people say, the next 10, 15 years, they can't participate in the economic system, right? Because it can't work. If nobody can buy houses, then the housing market is going to crumble. We already saw what happened to happen. So there has to be a balance where people are able to get educated to become better resourced, to become part of the job market. That's all macro. That's all the system has to keep working. So when somebody says, I don't care about the kids, right? Okay, if you're saying that on a group level, you're saying I don't care about society. And that's why I said, okay, the conversation is not really should we do something about student debt. The conversation is what should we do about student debt? Because it's there. It's real.
No, your points are very well taken and very valid. I mean, the point that I was making with this person is that he's like, oh, you people who want to send their children to college should plan properly, put money aside, and, you know, be able to self-fund their education. And I'm like, well, if you're living in a district or an area where the education from K to 12 in your mind is inferior, I won't prepare your child for their 4-year education, which is needed to get jobs these days, because most jobs, if you don't have a 4-year degree, don't even bother to apply. No one's even going to look at you. So my point was, you end up spending money on private school, K to 12, which is money that you normally should be saving for their college. You're paying that money now just to get them educated properly, K through 12.
True. And again, that's not everyone's reality. That's, again, why I said FAPE was provided. But there are alternatives to FAPE. And there are people, like you said, who feel that their child is not going to be adequately prepared or is being adequately prepared, and therefore they put them in private schools, right? So to your point now, private schools are basically double taxation because I'm still getting taxed. And again, I don't know how it works as far as being able to deduct some or not. We're not accountants. Maybe there is some way. There should be some way to deduct some. But the point is, the money that I should have to pay the money out of my pocket, right? That's the point of FAPE. I shouldn't have to. But because there is systematic inequalities in different school districts, I might have to, right? Because if my kid is not being educated adequately, what's the point of it being free? So now I got to pay for it. So again, I'm already at a deficit. So we already talked about being a deficit when you have school for free. Now you're a deficit because you're paying for school. So I agree with your point there. Going back to the idea of what the person said, the person who was against debt forgiveness or forbearance, whatever. When he says that parents should plan adequately, how do you feel about just that particular part, plan adequately?
All right. To plan adequately would mean that you have to have adequate income to put money aside in the first place. I mean, you have to look at where the person is coming from. So if you're coming from families where the person is not college educated, is not a college graduate, and they're subjugated to lower income jobs, where's this additional money going to be available to even put money aside? You're really able to make ends meet to put food on the table, never mind educate your children.
True. I like your point, but I don't think you listen to what I said. Do you need money to plan, not to implement a plan? Do you need money to just to have a plan, to have an idea, a goal, a strategy?
You need money to implement a plan. You can make a plan. I mean, if there's no money, there's no money, but you can make plans.
Right. So going back to what he said again, right, would that not be the first step? I want to have a plan. Now, the plan may get derailed. It may not be funded. It may not work. The reason why I say that is a lot of time in conversation, you hear people say, oh, I didn't know that, or I didn't realize that, or I didn't think of that. And I'm not in any one situation. I'm saying that's why I'm going to take what he said as far as a plan, right? Because just because you have a plan doesn't mean it's going to work. Like, we have a plan to get past COVID. Is it going to happen? Who knows, right? We don't know. But there's a plan in place.
Well, that's true. The thing I'll say to that, and again, that person obviously didn't want to hear this, but we're actually making a plan to try to find money to pay for the K through 12. So the post-grad, you know, the post-high school education, you don't have a plan for that because you're trying to figure out how you're going to get them through K through 12.
Tired of the same rap songs. Uh-huh. Every new hit should sing along. Yeah. Rap is so boring, now correct me if I'm wrong. Yeah. It's like they took the art form. I'm tired of the same rap songs.
Okay. And then when you get through 12 and you're going to go to college, a lot of times, because a lot of us aren't college graduates, so I don't have experience dealing with the higher educational system. We may not know how it works or what the final amount is going to be, because as we're going to get to later when you know, talking, most times when you're buying a major purchase, you know how much you're going to pay monthly and how much you're going to, you know, how long you're going to pay for this duration. And a lot of times with a four-year education, you'll get into something and really not have any idea of what it's going to cost you.
That's true. That's true. So again, I think you're putting a lot of points all together as opposed to spreading them out, because I'm going back to the point of planting, okay, right? Because I think what happened to a lot of parents is I don't really know what to do with my kid, right? Basically, first day of school, I showed a bunch of documents. I just fling them at the school registrars. They sign them up and that's it. Some parents, that school's not good enough, so I'm going to find some money and go, and I'll just fling it at the school. They'll take it and then they'll do that. And I guess what I'm saying is that a lot of parents, and I'm not blaming them, I'm just outlining the nature of our reality. A lot of parents aren't fully aware of the academic system, either K-12, private or public, right? They're kind of just going to the store and being led around, as opposed to having the resources to understand what to expect before I even think about going to the store, right? Some people understand cars, and when they go someplace, they can tell the salesman how the car works. And some people, whatever the salesman says, it's either yes or no. So I think I'm saying plan in the sense of awareness. Again, if you don't have the money, what's the difference? But at least I understand what I'd like to see happen. Even if I'm paying for my kid's K-12, the goal is my kid to go to school beyond K-12. So what kind of a plan? How can I amend my plan to at least recognize it? Right? Again, I may not have the money to do it, right? Good example of lack of planning is that there was no plan in place to have COVID vaccinations roll out the way it is, which is one reason why it's rolling out so slow, right? It's not the plan wasn't working. There wasn't a plan. There's a plan. So how do you do it? And we know why. We're not going to get to the politics of why, but the point is, how can you do something when you're not planning it? The answer is usually you can't, right? So what I'm saying is, at least when we say, okay, you know what? These are some of the most important things that are going to happen in my life and my family's life. So how can I gain more information about it, and how can I be better prepared and come up with a better plan? And I'm just saying that only because I think that goes back to more the awareness. This is how it should work, or this is what I'm hoping. Now, how do I make it happen? Goes back to your point of I don't have that much money because of the job that I have. What more can I do?
Yeah, no, your point is well taken. I mean, a point I'll say is that a lot of people, because they're trying to create plans to make ends meet, they can't think down the road as to what the optimal plan would be. Plus, they probably haven't been in a situation where they have any exposure to what the higher plan would call for.
True, true. And again, so we could talk about the failing of the system next. And again, for our listeners, this is no money, mo problems. And we're targeting today basically on the educational system because, as we've established already, there is a link between the money that you currently have access to, your resources, your net worth, where you live, the type of education you're then going to be able to provide for your children, and then the future earnings of your child. So this episode, you might think it's just about the bank. It's really about how the bank and lack of affects everything else. So that's really what we're trying to establish here. So going back, so say that the person on Facebook was someone who would have a conversation, right? Because you know me, I don't feel Facebook is a good platform for, I don't think any of them are a good platform for debates. They're just basically people in the bar yelling at other people in the bar, knowing that no one can see them. That's why they're yelling, right? They're not actually in a bar. But that being said, if someone who had that viewpoint was across the table, what do you think you could say that might get them to have some kind of understanding of where you're coming from?
Well, I would simply point out to them different advantages they may have had that they take as a given that it's not given to everybody. All right, what type of income do you have? Where do you live? What type of public education system is there? I mean, because we all know, all right, we say me and you went to a public high school in the city. It's one building. We had access to books and computers and things like that. We've also seen where other communities we've went to, it's a same type of school, but they have four football fields, different buildings, state-of-the-art educational, you know, learning apparatus to help them to become the best they can be. So you can't say those schools are equal.
No, that's true. That's true. That's a good point. And I think about...
Because a person told me, oh, if the schools where you are not adequate, move. And obviously, the places you would need to move, the average medium income is way higher. The cost of living is way higher. So obviously, if you can't afford it to move there, you're excluded from that type of education.
Well said, well said. And I think that's a good point, because I think inherent in that person's answer was the fact that part of the suggestion was to move, right? So they're acknowledging now that there is, or possibly is, a inferiorness to the education that your child is receiving and move. And we know everybody can't move, which is why I started out the conversation saying that there's a difference between macro and micro. Yeah, one, two, maybe three people, right? Whatever percentage of people can move. Everybody can't move. One, because they don't have the resources, and two, because where are they going to go? Everybody's just going to come to this new district and just overflood it. So, I mean, that's the point about it being macro, saying, no, it's not just me. It's not just certain people, right? It's the system. It's systemic. If people are not being adequately dealt with here, then the answer is for them all to go someplace else. Where's that someplace else, and how did it get there? So that's a good point. That's what I'm saying, because we don't want to really have conversation with people that don't want to hear what we're saying or have a conversation, right? Because that goes nowhere. But you want to have a conversation with somebody that's like, I didn't really think of it that way. Because like he said, if his answer was you should move, he's identifying, okay, yeah, then your district is not good enough. And the real answer would be, what can we do to make that district better? What's going on, man? I don't understand it. I want something good to listen to. I demand it. All the real artists on another planet. And me, I'm the last MC still standing.
Well, true. And then you have people that do think outside the box and somehow get their child into a school outside the district, and the next thing you know, they're getting in trouble because, oh, you know, obviously there's some type of fraud involved, and now they're going to be put into jail because your child didn't belong here. You don't really live here. Your cousin lived there. Well, why is your child in the school?
Right. And I'll just talk over that and go back to my last point, not over you, but over that point, saying that's why we said that, again, if the answer is for somebody to move, it means where they are is not adequate. Right. So if your boat is sinking, why would you stay in a sinking boat? Now, that being said, you can't steal somebody else's boat and say you belong there. So that's why I said the whole point of it is saying, OK, your boat is sinking and we have to acknowledge that that's a sinking boat and that's not healthy for anybody. Because there's times people see people sinking boats, say, oh, that boat is fine. There's nothing wrong with that boat. That boat's better than my boat. And that's what you say, all right, now you're being an idiot. And I'm sorry to use that word on our podcast, but really you are. I mean, clearly there are people that are struggling through no fault of their own. It's a systemic struggle. And for someone to simply say that, you know, they're in a better circumstance, it's not real. So I'm not going to defend someone doing the wrong thing. I'm going to say if it's not their fault that they're doing the wrong thing, then we have to blame the system.
No, well said on your side. Well said.
So, okay, if you can get someone to understand that every district is not the same, every kid is not being educated adequately, and moving is not an option for, I'm going to say it's not an option because, again, when we say move, we're saying you and you and you. We're not saying everyone, right? Because let's say, oh, well, my district is open, and if anybody wants to come. Okay, fine. So what if three other districts just suddenly came? Oh, I didn't mean everybody. Ah, you said moving was the solution. So if move is a solution and all these people are on sinking boats, why wouldn't they try to flood your boat? That's why we got to try to fix their boats.
No, well said. And again, you know, the average person, it says move. Well, again, if the areas you're living in, the average, you know, rental payment is $1,500, and then this other place, the average payment is $4,000, you tell the person to move, they're going to move with what?
We understand. That's right. Why
a disparity in the education, because there's a lot more money in that district.
Right. But we're also talking about theoreticals, right? Like, for example, we're not talking about somebody that we know we can do it. We're just saying in principle, right? So in principle, right? If I had the means to live in a different area, I might already live there. But again, that's not a solution. You know, on a macro level, that's not a solution. If a country is poor, yeah,
that's a solution for an individual person, not for why the system has inequities and all, you know, for everyone.
Right. In other words, on a micro level, yes, but a macro level, everyone can't move. I was saying that if you have a poor country, don't say, well, just move the whole country. Who moves countries? Like, what are you talking about? Yeah, just move the whole country because they're poor, so everybody should just move. So we move countries now? Who does that? Come on.
Yeah, yeah, great.
So what do you think as far as planning now? Because I think planning is key, because I imagine, or you did state that as the conversation went on, there are people who go to college, their children go to college, and they're quoted one figure. So now there's a financial aid system, right? And I think that's where it gets a little murky, because K-12 is free. It's taken care of. Whether it works or not, show up, write papers, you're in. College is different. It's not free, always, usually. Show up if you're lucky to show up, and you then have to find the money. That's what financial aid is for. How does that work from your perspective, and how does that not work from your perspective as far as creating the situation right now with this tremendous student debt?
Well, number one, a lot of times they will, you know, say that you did try to pay for your child's tuition, so you paid the first semester or whatever, you're able to find the money, or say there's a shortfall, you know, they're normally... the child will call you up at home. Oh, I need more money. I don't have enough to pay, blah, 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 blah. And they go and sit down with the financial aid counselor. And they say, oh, you can sign here and we'll give the money for X, Y, and Z. And you'll be good. And then, you know, the parent is like, well, how much is this going to be? Oh, it's only going to be a couple of $1,000 for the semester. That's not that much, blah, blah, blah. Well, you get like a 10-year term to finance it. You know, they'll work it out with you. Now, the problem with that is that obviously we know college is not like, say, you buy a car. You know, the car costs $20,000. You may have other add-ons, but you know exactly what the total cost is and what your monthly payments are going to be. College, next thing you know, they're adding on room and board. Oh, your kids got to have a meal plan. You know, they just add these figures on, and you don't really know what the total number is going to be until the end of the 4 years or 6 years. Because, again, if you don't take enough credits, you don't graduate in 4 years. And no one tells you that when you first start.
Okay. I mean, I'll take that. I think a lot more awareness is needed. I'm Sean P.
I'm Big Root.
And we are the brothers.
Peace out.
I'm tired of the same rap songs. Every new hit, sing along. Rap is so boring, now correct me if I'm wrong. It's like they took the art out the art form. What's going on, man? I don't understand it. I want something good to listen to. I demand it. All the real artists on another planet. And me, I'm the last MC still standing.